1-800-681-4860 and let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed now? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday, and it is the 2nd of May already in the year 2005, and we had snow flurries this afternoon. I wonder what, thanks very much, and I wonder what your what your weather is like, folks. This sure doesn't feel like May. We had one day in that was 80 and a few very nice days, but other than that, this is not spring. Not here, not yet, except the birdies say so, so maybe it is. Let me do our spiritual message this right now. And then we'll bring our guest up. This is from John, chapter 4, beginning with verse 4. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And in verse 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God, for God is love. And that is the only thing in this world, this physical world, I see that is real, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not saying that because I say it is so, but in my mind and in my heart, there's nothing real here other than love and our expressions of love to one another and to ourselves. And Alan Watt is with us again this evening. Alan, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, well, I was outside doing stuff today, and you know, I get really I guess what it is because it's staying light longer.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a clock watcher, so I kind of judge the time by what the darkness is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to quit doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I keep getting, you were very gracious to come on with 2 minutes notice.
Oh, that's no problem.
Yeah.
But we had the same weather this way. Yeah.
Same weather?
Yeah, it was sleet and snow for a little while. Yeah.
Today?
Today,
yeah. Yep.
They're standardizing the weather. Yeah.
Yeah, along with frozen pizza, Alan.
Yeah, and the rest of the continent. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, it was very short notice when I called you, of course, and I really didn't have anything particular in mind to talk about. Is there anything that you would like to discuss with or bring up for our listeners tonight?
Well,
you know, I don't have a real good voice level on you. I suppose you haven't done anything different, have you?
No.
And I suppose we'll hear a click a little later on, and
probably, yeah.
Then your voice level will come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, there's always so much going on behind the scenes, because most of the politics that we're given is just drama, and the gossip that they laid out on the politicians and so on. To keep the people busy, but I mean, the agenda that was written a long time ago to not only unite the continent, but to unite the planet under a particular system is rushing full steam ahead. And of course, everybody's been kept so busy running as the buying power of their money decreases.
Oh my, I know.
Yeah, so they're running faster and faster to get all these toys they're supposed to have, according to what they've been told is their standard of living. But since we're not the producers anymore, the manufacturers, it hasn't dawned on most people that the system, as it is now, is not meant to last for very long. It's a service industry, as they call it.
Say what? It's a what?
Service industry.
Oh, yeah, Alan.
Yeah. And that's what they told Britain as well when they united them into Europe, that they would become a service industry.
Well, and the U.S. is a service industry, too.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so the only and in fact, I've got books from the Royal Institute of International Affairs and the CFR. It's both the same club. Because you don't want to have the Royal in front of the American name, so they called it the CFR. But their 1937 meeting held in Australia, their annual meeting, in there, the minutes of the meetings are there with the speeches and everything. And one of the speakers said that they would set up China to be the manufacturer for the world in 1937.
Oh, you know what I'd like you to do?
Yeah. And I've had to rush every book to get a copy.
Yeah, excuse me, just a minute.
Yeah.
We were talking about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned, Alan, thank you for bringing this up tonight. You know, when we have conversations off air, so often, and I don't say it like I used to you, I wish we were doing this on the air.
Yeah.
But our last conversation, and I thought, oh my goodness, I wish our listeners could hear this, but we were talking about this, and you mentioned why they chose the Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
And would you explain this to our listeners?
Yeah.
What you did last night, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to turn my mic down. I'm going to run out and grab a robe because it's chilly where I'm sitting, so I'll be back.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Yeah, well, if you look down through history, pretty well every country on the planet has been invaded over and over and over by one group or another. But the one that's been least invaded and left alone has been China. And I used to wonder why they left China to be such a pure race compared to all the rest of the peoples whom they mixed up through invasions and so on. And then you look at the culture of China, and I thought, well, what's different about the culture? Well, they've never known what we would call freedom of any kind. Not that we've had really much freedom in the last few hundred years, but they also are a mass man, and in the sociological books that you can get from any university library, where they have the different cultures delineated and broken down into traits and so on, you'll find that the Chinese like, actually don't mind being in a crowd. They like to rub shoulders, as they say in the books, with their fellow man, whereas, of course, the Western people like their distance from each other, don't invade my space type of thing. So they, although not so much in the last 1,500 years, they have not been an inventive people. Prior to that, inventions were in China. They had detection devices for earthquakes 2,500 years ago there.
I just want you to know I'm back. You continue, Alan.
Yeah. So I wondered why all these main invaders gave China this big passage of clearance and including Napoleon, who said, "Let the sleeping dragon sleep." So no one wanted to invade China, and it wasn't because China was well armed or anything. In fact, there was mainly a peasant class catering to the few nobility across the whole length and breadth of the country, and it had been that way for a couple of thousand years. But even though they're not an inventive people, they can certainly mimic what they're given very, very well.
They can what?
Mimic. They can copy very well what they're given. And then if you look at the history as it's unfolded, Western Europe primarily was used for the last couple of hundred years or more to go through an industrial era of intense misery for the general population, especially in factory towns. But during that time, we developed machinery, etc., and then we went through the electronic revolution, a technological revolution. And now that we completed our mission, basically, apart from conquering the last of the Muslims to bring into the system, they've quite candidly, through the GATT treaties and so on, handed all of the what were American, or what we thought as American and Canadian and British and German and so on companies, they've handed them all lock, stock and barrel over to China. They set them up and they moved them. Complete factories.
Yes, and did you say while I was gone what you said about why they chose the Chinese?
Yeah, because the Chinese, as I say, are perfect for this era, perfect to be the manufacturers.
And why is that?
In an advanced type of manufacturing, they didn't invent anything in that manufacturing. However, they didn't have to. We simply handed it all over once we had basically perfected technology and simplified it to its basic form.
But you also mentioned their work habits.
Yeah, I mean, the Chinese are known to be so obedient to their masters for thousands of years that they'd work all day and half the night if need be. And nothing has changed, really, even though it's communistic run. They don't have a culture where there's a lot of kindness between each other to help each other out either, so they're divided to an extent in that respect. But they're ideal workers for this particular era to create, and very, very cheap too, to be the manufacturers for the whole planet. So when you look back on things, you can see the plan, and you can smell the plan, actually, for hundreds of years. But in the later books, in the 1900s and 20th century, into the present day, you actually see it all happening and being written down that this is going to happen. We've lived through the transfer of technology to China with the factories, lock, stock, and barrel. I used to wonder why would the West be training thousands of engineers of all kinds in the West, in the Western universities, for the last 30 years, when they were supposedly your prime enemy, they were communists. But all of these engineers were being trained in Canada.
Oh, these are Chinese people?
Yeah.
Oh.
Students were coming to Canada and Britain and Europe and so on. And getting this education for machinery which they did not yet have. And of course, since about 1990,
wow,
we've seen that the exodus after the GATT Treaty of all the machinery which they had been trained to use but didn't have, we saw it all transferred to China. Now everything is
yes.
made in China.
You know, this is something that was brought to my attention, and I suppose maybe many people have considered this, but until it was during the NAFTA thing, I had never thought about it. But, you know, during the Depression, there were many, you know, plenty of people to work, and there were plenty of people to purchase manufactured items and food goods that were, you know, produced on the farms, etc. But the Depression was simply the withdrawal, of course, withdrawing in of the money, just the way the story goes in the Old Testament in Genesis, when Joseph gathered up all the money and took it to the Pharaoh. But there were the factories sitting there, Alan, you see. And so that when they decided they'd start trickling money back in, well, today there are no factories sitting. They have not just moved manufacturing. They have moved all of the factories and either, you know, flattened the buildings or I guess they've just demolished the factories, period.
Yeah.
So it isn't a situation like it was after the Depression.
Yeah, because they know they were not going to use them ever again.
That's yeah.
Why they demolished.
And you mentioned a service industry.
Yeah.
When I remember hearing about that, I thought, well, you know, everybody's going to be doing what? What do they mean by this?
There's an esoteric meaning to all the words in the English language.
Well, say it. What it means to you?
Ice always means when you put something on ice, it means you stop it.
Yeah.
You freeze it. You see. And
serve ice.
Just like they park continents down through history and leave them and then go back.
Yeah, but they're talking about a service economy.
Yep.
So the actual meaning of the word is just stop the economy.
It's the whole stop the whole thing because we are now unneeded. We're unnecessary. That's why they're rewilding the areas around people in the country. While those people are still alive, they're putting in carnivores and predators. You know, I mean, that's telling you something. That's telling you that shortly there's not going to be those people living in the country.
Yeah, well, and think about, okay, because that's what I wondered is, where would all the jobs, you know, how would people have work? And, of course, today, millions don't. But, you know, in the protocols, this was just amazing. I've been scanning them lately, Alan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every now and then you do that, and you pick up things. Of course, I had already had this circled and highlighted, but it's just a reminder. This is in Protocol 17. It says, in our program, one-third of our subjects will keep the rest under observation from a sense of duty on the principle of volunteer service to the state. So when you think about it, there are government jobs, and then there will be the people who will be spying on all the people. It's exactly like Orwell's 1984, Alan.
But that's been happening for a long time.
I know, but it's really getting obvious today.
Yes,
I mean, it's blatant to people. It's blatant to people that have never read 1984 or really thought about what's going on. It's been the slowly boiling frog syndrome.
Yeah.
Well, they're nuking the frog now.
Well,
I mean, this
are.
Isn't I mean, just fast cooking. It's nuking the frog.
Well, as I say, they've been spraying us like bugs from the sky pretty well daily for the last few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, this stuff supposedly has aluminum and barium in it, which are used for clotting agents for wounds and things.
For what?
For any kind of wound or hemorrhage, you know.
No. Barium and what?
Aluminum oxide.
And it's used for what?
You can use them for clotting agent.
Clotting agent.
If something's bleeding, you know.
Gotcha.
And
do they put it on the wound or do they?
Yeah, you put it on a wound.
I think I've heard of that, Alan.
But if you see that in Canada, for instance, and in other countries now for the last couple of years, the government is putting out ads warning people on the signs and symptoms of strokes, you know.
Oh, okay.
So now we've got young people coming down with strokes all over the place,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, a clot, you see, lodged basically in the brain or what's in the core.
Haven't there been a lot of young athletes dying suddenly?
Yeah.
Has it been strokes or heart attacks or?
Mm-hmm. People are getting sick. They have these hacking coughs they can't get rid of. And And those who aren't affected as yet eventually will be, because everyone's got a tolerance level as they ingest this stuff, breathe this stuff in, and drink it, because it's in everything. It's in the food, the water, and in the air we breathe.
I know it is.
So eventually we'll come to a crisis point. And I've no doubt, as we go through a rising death toll, we'll still see the familiar faces on TV and the same comedies. And Joe Blow will think, well, everything must be okay because it seems the same on the TV.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
You know that terrible cough I've had lately?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had that on and off for a long time. But sometimes it's gone and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah.
Well, I just have to say this because I want to share it with our listeners, too. I started taking my MSM Plus again about 5 days ago, Alan. And it is clearing up amazingly. I'm not doing anything else different. I haven't been doing, I did a couple days oil of oregano, but boy, I'll tell you, and it's always in my left lung, whatever it is that I've had. But it's clearing up, and I knew it would. That's why it's so stupid that, you know, that I haven't been taking it. But when I very first started taking MSM, found out about it, that was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I guess. But whatever, I really started taking it because my wrist started hurting real bad. And it's wonderful for arthritis. But I had a wheeze for, it just seemed ever. I mean, years. And it was a light wheeze. You know, not like that or something. But when every night when I laid down, there was a wheeze there. And I couldn't clear it out. It was a bronchial thing, I guess. But anyway, I started taking that MSM for my wrist. And I'm laying in bed reading one night, and it was very soon afterward, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not wheezing. And it was the MSM, and I knew that it was, along with getting, well, in the patent medical study for MSM, the lung conditions are one of the top of, you know, it's like the lungs, the stomach, and arthritis, that it really seems to zero in on. But I wanted to let our listeners know this because I know this stuff works. And the reason it works is because it is working at the cellular level of the body, you know, in order to allow the body to reproduce healthy, normal cells, Alan. And our bodies, evidently, if we are deficient in methylsulfonylmethane, this isn't an advertisement, by the way. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I want our listeners to know this. I'm thinking of buying several cases of MSM, to be honest with you, you know, thinking about this Codex thing coming up.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is that it does work. I had a talk to a lady whose husband had asbestosis. Mm-hmm. That was from some job he had with, I guess it's asbestos condition from breathing asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
And he... he had to use, he had to wear an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
And he started taking MSM, Alan, and within weeks, and I know it sounds actually ridiculous to say that because I don't know that it works that fast on everybody, but her husband was able to go up the stairs for the first time in years not without any oxygen.
Yeah.
So this lung thing, I'm going to discipline myself to continue to take this.
Yeah.
Because I want to know absolutely, it makes sense. If our lungs are being damaged, mm-hmm. and there is a natural form of sulfur which the body requires in order to function properly, which is missing, and the body can reproduce those healthy cells, the body could repair damaged lungs.
I wouldn't agree with you.
Well, that's okay. You don't have to.
I'll tell you why. Because as you're being poisoned, you see, they're laying this stuff on thick.
They're laying, yeah.
And they're not letting up on it to let you heal, you see. And as I say, it's in the groundwater. When the snow melted this year, there were 3 inches of this candy cane type stuff all over the fields, which was the residue, the drying residue of a few months of accumulation of spraying that was in the snow. And on the first day of sun, it started to go down, and then when it dried, it turned back into its chemical parts, white powders. So we're being sprayed like bugs, like roaches.
Yes, but what has that got to do with, you don't agree that what? You don't agree that anything could heal the lungs?
How can you heal something as you're being poisoned all the time?
I don't know.
It can't happen.
Okay, let's put it this way. Let's say if that wasn't an ongoing onslaught,
mm-hmm.
the healing could happen. And possibly, think about this, Alan, without it, maybe the damage continues until the person drops.
Well, the fact is...
So maybe it at least keeps them a modicum of health.
If they want to try it, they can try it.
I don't sell MSM, Alan.
No, but what I'm saying...
I have nothing to gain here, honey.
Yeah, but as you're being poisoned, it's like getting a transfusion in one arm with a cut wrist on the other.
Yeah, okay, I want to share something else with you. And our listeners, but you also... When my mom was told that she had a cancer
mm-hmm.
on her vocal cord, they did radiation therapy on her. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
6 weeks of it. Well, meantime, Mom had, and my stepdad Dell had come back from Arizona. Mom had something terrible going on in her lungs, and she said that she was so breathless that she actually got winded going from the breakfast table over to the couch. She couldn't even make the bed. She had gone to the doctor for that, and she had a terrible wheeze that she said it kept her awake. It was so noisy, so she was sleeping sitting up. Well, I had just read the Patton Medical Study for the MSM, and where they said that it eliminated the untoward effects of radiation. And then it told about people who have to undergo radiation therapy. I called my mom, and I sent her bottles of MSM, and she was taking, you know, probably 10,000 milligrams a day. She had radiation therapy for 6 weeks, Alan. They told her, your throat is going to get very sore. You'll probably have to drink liquids. Your neck will turn red, etc. You'll lose your voice. My mom went through 6 weeks of radiation therapy without any, quote, untoward effects. The doctors couldn't believe it. And meantime, she was able to begin to breathe again. The breathlessness was gone, the wheeze. And she said, it has to be the MSM, honey, because I'm not taking anything else. So what I'm telling you, Alan, and our listeners, I guess, and, you know, I've been wanting to talk about this for so long, and I just put everything else in front of it. But it's a wonderful thing to have. And I could actually spend an hour, I could, talking about it. So I'm going to get off it now because I know what it has done for so many different people. And look at my girls, 9-year-old mastiffs without a drop of arthritis, Alan. And they're 90 years old in human life. They get MSM every single day. They have ever since they've been little puppies. And, you know, that's one of the things that kind of got me taking it again. I look at them and look at what good condition they're in. And I know it's part of it is the MSM. Folks, we have to take a break. We're going to be right back. Alan, I'll get off with me.
Okay.
Thanks. He had more time than I thought. And
years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn,
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
Okay, I want to say thank you to Nicholas, the owner of First Amendment Radio, and the owner and the engineer and everything. Nicholas, thank you for turning that break music down. We never did have a conversation about it, but I see that it has happened, and that's thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, our guest, as you know, is Alan Watt, and I apologize for the time that I've taken away from, because Alan is our guest tonight. And but we'll talk about MSM another time. And it must be MSM Plus, and I'll explain that another time too. Alan, thank you.
Okay.
We have a caller who has a couple questions for Alan. Mm-hmm. Alan, do you accept my apology?
For what?
Hey? Take it. No, not you, Alan. Alan Watt. Well, just because I've been talking so much.
No, on you go. It's all right. It's a passion of yours.
No, you're my guest.
Okay.
So, do you accept my apology?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Alan is on the air from Michigan,
yeah.
And he wants to ask you a couple questions. Alan from Michigan, are you aware that you're going to hang up to hear his answer?
Oh, well, I didn't ask the question yet.
I know, but I wanted to know if you know that, hon.
Okay. I wanted to know why Billy Graham was picked to be America's preacher by William Randolph first. And the second question, does he know anything about the Masonic Lodges, where they're dated, when they're put up and they're established? Something dated Anna Lucis. Do you know anything about that? Why did you do this?
Okay, Alan, did you get both of those questions, Alan?
The bit on the Harris thing was a bit fuzzy.
Okay, do the Billy Graham question again, Alan.
I want to know why Billy Graham was picked by William Randolph Hearst to be America's preacher. Yeah. And the other question was, does he know anything about Masonic lodges being dated some year by Anna Lucis? It says like 5526 A.L., Anna Lucis. Those are the two questions I wanted to ask.
Do you understand that question, Alan?
Yeah, well, that's asking.
Okay, well, okay, he's going to hang up so he can hear your answer. Okay, thanks, Alan.
Yeah, that's after Lucifer's fall, supposedly, meaning the light coming down, and it's the same story as Prometheus bringing the wisdom down, the light, the torch, the fire, to those who could accept it. And of course, the Masons claim that around 4000 BC, that's when the plan to change the world, the ways of living from a natural system into their system began, which is to culminate with the evolution of man worldwide through physical and scientific means, which is exactly what they're coming to.
This is on Masonic Lodges as the date, yes?
Yeah, they have two dates. They have the one that was built, then they have the same date plus about 4,000 years. So
and people. That was after the fall of Lucifer?
Or Prometheus. It's the same story.
Okay, but Lucifer being the fallen angel, yes?
Yeah, the light bringer.
Oh, there you come. Here you come, Alan.
Did it go up?
That's wonderful.
Maybe the operator is getting interested here.
You know what? That very easily could be whatever it was. Thank you, whoever upped that volume.
Yeah, and then as far as Hearst goes, well, Hearst was not just a self-made man. All these big boys are put in place, they're trained for what they're to do, because their job is to control the minds of the people, and you do it through media. media is an arm of government. It's an arm, an essential arm of government. You can't mind control the people without it. And as long as the people think it's free and independent, we get suckered and we believe in it. But Hearst, of course, picked Billy Graham because Billy Graham is a 33rd degree Freemason, and he's been open about that in the last couple of years. And of course, Freemasons, as Napoleon, as Benjamin Franklin said, and many others, when I'm in the Middle East, I'm a Mohammedan. When I'm in London, I'm a Christian, etc., etc. In other words, they can be whatever they want. You see?
Okay.
And Billy Graham's job, as any high priest has always been down through the many centuries, is to once again control the minds of the people. That's his job. He's a multi-billionaire probably, but he's a 33rd degree Freemason.
Or higher.
At least that's the Scottish rite.
Right, at least, or maybe even higher.
Well, life begins at 40, so he's probably over the 40th degree into a higher lodge.
Is that what that means, Alan?
Yeah.
Life begins at 40. In other words, when you hit the 40th degree,
you start to get the truth.
Oh, my.
Below that, you know, under the 32nd degree, it's a camouflage even for the people involved at the bottom who truly do think it's a self-improvement society that does charitable works. But if you're involved in any kind of mind control, which is media, even a local newspaper, the Grand Master will pull you out of the lodge and tell you to be at a certain place at a certain night, and he'll take you to the Black Lodge, where you go up higher, you see. And those in the Blue Lodge won't even know that it exists. So this is what they do. They pick out the ones who are useful for mind control primarily, or politics or whatever.
Okay.
And they throw them up through the degrees, the higher degrees.
And many of them reach their high levels of politics because of their already status as a Freemason.
Absolutely. They've proven their worth. You see, the workman must prove his worthiness, mm-hmm. which means that you can keep your mouth shut and follow orders.
Uh-huh.
That's what it means. A Mason is avowed to instantly obey the order of a superior Mason without hesitation, and he must immediately reserve all his moral consciences to himself and obey it. And these guys have been involved through petty little scams and so on at the bottom to see if they can keep their mouth shut. And if they can, they get up the ladder into the bigger scams.
Ah, they test them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Oh, they're tested constantly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Even
and that's even in some of their older manuals.
How high up do you have to get before you quit being tested?
Oh, once you're up to the at least 96.
And there's nobody above 96?
Oh, yeah, the 360 degrees in a circle.
Alan, are you being serious right now?
Yeah, I am.
So, in other words, we go, he's a 33rd degree Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that in any book that there are 360 degrees of
What they do is they hint at it all the time.
It makes sense.
They hint at it all the time. The OTO, which is the Order Templi Orientis, which is the sort of French version, supposedly, of the Templars, which really is German, and they got to about 96 degrees. And that is official. Aleister Crowley, that worked for MI6 in England, and everybody in MI6 had to be a Freemason, according to Peter Wright, who wrote Spycatcher. He belonged it. He's the only guy who wasn't a Mason. You know?
But it was actually made public that he was 96 degrees?
Aleister Crowley, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Aleister Crowley wasn't yet at the top.
Oh, no. No. He was a good workman. He did his job. Anybody in the public eye will be way above, at least up to 96 degrees. After that, it's more invisible.
Is this researchable for people?
You really want to go on the trail for it,
I mean, I'm not accusing you of saying something like, you know, you're lying here or something, but this is something I've never heard before, And I have a sense that there are listeners who will definitely want to research this.
Yeah, yeah. It's all based on the sun.
Uh-huh.
And of course...
And it isn't... In other words, I guess what I'm asking is, through your observation and all the other stuff
mm-hmm.
that you've learned, this is what you've deduced? Or is it actually written someplace?
It's written in an occasional old book. And many other books will actually hint at it, because you're supposed to figure it out for yourself. That's why they say the profane will never catch on.
So you're not the profane, huh, Alan?
That's right. So, of course, everything is circular.
Does that mean you're one of them?
Oh, no. Everything is circular, and, of course, is based on the movements of the sun going through the zodiac and so on.
Yes.
And the planets going round the sun. And, well, what does round mean? It means you go round in a complete circle, one revolution.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they give you all the visible symbols of the serpent eating its tail, etc. But most people don't catch on, you see.
The serpent eating its tail.
Yeah. And, of course, Theosophy has that on its logo. So.
And what does that signify?
Well, they give you different meanings depending on what category or degree you're in.
Okay.
And Albert Pike admits that the guys in the lower degrees must not necessarily know the meanings of the rituals and words, but they must think that they know.
Uh-huh.
So as they get up, they say, well, all that stuff we told you before was just nonsense, you know.
But what does it signify to them?
Partly eternity.
Oh, okay.
You see? And they'll tell you that at the lower degrees, it's eternal.
Uh-huh.
It's their power for eternity, by the way. But in the higher degrees, of course, you look at any dial, a sundial or anything, and you'll see, wait a minute, it's round here and it's all marked off in degrees. Why would it stop at 96? Yeah. It doesn't.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that's it. But mind you, too, I mean, it's admitted today that if you have the money and you have some kind of import, as I say, in society with your views and opinions, even a column writer for a newspaper, they can take you from nothing and put you through up to a 32nd degree Freemason in a matter of a couple of weeks. If you're going, 'cause you pay all the time, you see.
Uh-huh.
The 33rd degree is honorary, and it's after that, of course, that you really get into the real stuff, if you're asked. So
do they get to a point where they have to disavow Jesus?
Sure, because that's all part of it. I mean, they will tell you themselves that all religions, and they kind of boast about it, stemmed from the same solar cult. Thousands and thousands and thousands, actually almost a million years ago. And prior to that, there was the stellar cult, and prior to that, there was the lunar cult. And that's why the emblems they use come from all three, because they incorporated them all until they became the solar cult.
And it doesn't mean that just because they use these emblems that the emblems themselves are evil.
No.
Exactly. I just wanted our listeners... I remember Chuck... you know, because he knew about this longer than I did, but I noticed that, for example, they used the word light, mm-hmm. and he would highlight it when he'd read it in an article.
Yeah.
And he actually believed it to be evil because they used the word.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with these symbols. The symbols themselves are not evil. It's just that they symbolize something for them, and they're evil, so we relate the symbol itself to evil.
Yeah. And really, if you correlate the evil and the good symbols, and you can figure it out, you really find they're symbolizing the same things. Although one's supposed to be good and one is supposed to be evil, which is the intent of mind control, is doublethink, is holding two opposite opinions in your head about the same thing at the same time.
You mean their symbols mean to them
uh-huh.
what the symbols mean to a good person?
Well, sure. I mean, everyone's been taught recently, for instance, that what they think is the Star of David, which isn't, it's got another meaning, but they think that's a good symbol. All the Christians do. or modern Christians.
Well, no, the Christian Zionists or Judeo-Christians.
It's modern Christianity because they're all related they all belong to the World Council of Churches, which was started off by David Rockefeller, who's a high Mason and theosophist, and he calls himself a world citizen. So the whole idea of getting all these churches to belong is so that the same theology begins to be taught through all the different branches and of the church, you see. They all teach the same thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, they don't even notice the changes as they come in.
Well, you were going to talk about the Star of David?
Yeah, well, that's been taught to be a good symbol. And yet you find it in ancient India. I mean, I'm talking about ancient India, long before there was any Hebrew or Hebrew or whatever mentioned anywhere. It was in long use in India long before that.
Yeah.
So was the swastika, you know.
Right.
And a swastika is simply a symbol of the sun with the feet and its movements. That's what it stands for.
With its feet in its movement?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, they always go on, well, if it's reversed, it's black magic. If it means this, it's all nonsense. It's nonsense. It's the direction the sun appears to take as it walks across the sky. And that's what they used to call the sun, he who walks the sky in ancient Egypt, or Luke Skywalker in Star Wars.
You know,
it's all the same thing.
Wow.
So sure, you know, we are told to fear this, but this is okay. And of course, in different times in history, you might fear the one and like the other, and then we'll reverse it, and you don't even notice the difference.
Well, it's what they teach us to fear.
That's
and
right,
you know,
you
I
know.
Think that number 13 is a real good example of that.
Yeah.
That people, you know, 13, and of course they use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything for them is 13 and 33 and et cetera.
Yeah.
And of course we're told that 13 is an unlucky number.
Yeah.
And they won't put a 13th floor on an elevator.
Yeah, that's because of Jack de Molay.
I see.
He was burnt on the 13th.
I got to thinking, well, you know, in their belief, it's a pretty doggone powerful number, so why should we fear it?
Yeah, or walking under ladders or...
Yeah, yeah.
Or anything like that.
Right.
That's where it all comes from. These are all ancient symbols of masonry as it's progressed down through the ages.
So we get afraid of what they teach us to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And they tell us what to like.
Mm-hmm. And they can reverse it just as easily, and we don't notice.
Yes.
Just like they reverse the cultures when they wish to. During the industrial era, they really threw Christianity at the people who were starving in the cities, in industrial cities, to keep them in line. You know, work hard at your 16 hours now for your pittance and you'll go to heaven, you know. That's what the religion did for the people in Europe at that time, especially Britain.
Uh-huh.
And of course, once that job's over and you're no more industrialized, it's promiscuity time, just do what you want, you know. And that's how they do it. And they go through these changes, and the very generation that goes through the major changes doesn't even notice that now their beliefs and everything are upside down. But Plato said that was what they could do 2,500 years ago. It was so down pat 2,500 years ago that he could write about that, about the techniques of culture creation coming from the top, and the methods of implementing it through music, the arts, fashion, the drama, plays, etc.
That reminds me of what we were talking about when you said they tell us what we like.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say they tell us what to like.
Yeah.
They tell us what we like.
And we believe it.
Explain to our listeners, like the music thing. That never occurred to me, Alan.
Well, as I've said before, I said if the human brain has been the same for the last few hundred years, at least, then the teenager who's supposed to come into music around the age of 13 to 15, and he has a higher acuity of high tones and the low tones in music, the teenager should really like every type of music that every 15 years of age has ever liked in history.
Because the brain has not changed.
It hasn't changed.
Right.
But they literally think, my God, you know, this is fantastic stuff. Their dads or their mums or even their older sister or brother will say, well, listen to this. Oh, I don't want that. That's old stuff.
That's right.
And everything that they hear on the radios they listen to and the magazines that they buy and so on is telling them that this is your music.
Uh-huh.
And I've said, because of that, at the moment, you've got people in the old age homes who are listening to Walt Whitman.
Right.
And so on.
However...
And then you're going to get the rockers coming in who are geriatrics, tapping their feet to Pink Floyd, you know. And then eventually you're going to get geriatrics who are the rappers, believe it or not.
We'll be sitting around listening to rap music because it was the good old days.
It was their time.
It was their music and they still love it.
And to show you again how it's all...
And the music was given to us.
It's given to you. Plato said it. It says no culture is permitted to come from the people themselves. It says any cultural change, it says, comes from the top down. And it's always been that way. You know, the BBC were the ones in Britain. This is your government station. Everybody who staffed the BBC had to work for Eton, or be at Eton College. Yeah, that was a class system, you see.
Oh.
And here they are pushing Benny Hill with his almost new dancers in the 60s and pushing the pop revolution. And I said, well, why would an older generation be pushing this on a government-financed TV station? Because it seemed to contradict everything that they'd done to the people before, like be well-behaved, etc., you know,
yeah.
No promiscuity. And here they are completely reversing it, and it came from the top down. So that's how it goes. The Beatles... were a formulated group. They did not own their own songs. There's nothing real in show business, regardless of what all the magazines say. That's the magazine's job, is to make you think it's all real. But the fact is, these four guys were picked, and the songs were written by Theodore Adorno, one of the top musicians or music masters, you would say, of the construction of music in the planet. A Talmudic scholar as well, who could write a sentence that would be half a page long, and he would tell you in the beginning of his books that the average person will not be able to follow the sentence and keep grasp of the theme to the very end. Because he says, we've dumbed the people down so much. So, the people...
Hey, Alan. With the television, and you know
television,
how,
yeah.
Yeah, well, how they have those like 3 and 4 second shots,
yeah.
And then it switches, then it switches, then it switches.
But
that isn't the perfect tool to really mess up a person's ability to concentrate and focus.
Yes, because...
I mean, yeah, how could anybody hold the attention for more than a few seconds?
Well, I watched even my parents look at them, TVs like that, you know, I could see him hypnotized.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a child who watches TV all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean,
no wonder they can't.
The marketing companies actually do surveys on this.
Yeah.
Because they're targeting younger and younger children all the time.
And, you know, even the adults, come to think of it, as you said, they can't hold their attention to get through a book.
No, they can't, no.
Right, or
it's
follow a thought.
Bits and bytes is all they can handle.
To follow a thought.
Yeah.
It has to be in little short chunks.
Mm-hmm. And you can't extend the conversation on a particular topic without them losing track of where you're going with it. That their attention span is getting smaller and smaller.
Yes.
But as I say, the Beatles, everyone thinks, why'd they call them the Beatles? Well, it's the beat, you know. But it wasn't just the beat. It was from the Greek word, beatle, which is B-E-A-T-Y-L. And it means sacred pillars or sacred stones. Well, a sacred stone in masonry is an ashlar, the perfectly shaped ashlar, or...
A what, Alan?
An ashlar, they call it.
What is an ashlar?
Ashlar is a perfectly shaped stone, squared.
Oh, okay, thank you, it's squared.
And so they take the round one, which is the natural one, and they square it as a mason. And, of course, that's why in the 60s and 70s they called the people squares. If you were old-fashioned and stiff upper lip and work ethic and so on, and of course the Beatles were the sacred stones. It's also the same as the
Rolling Stones.
the Rolling Stones were natural stones, so they came right out and sang about sex.
And they rolled and...
Yeah, whereas, and they did their roll-ups with their dope and all the rest of it. But the Beatles, of course, if you look at the songs, were exoteric for the people and esoteric for the message, if you could grasp the messages.
Uh-huh.
Why would they knight Paul McCartney, who helped bring in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, LSD? Why would the royalty knight people who created disaster, apparently, across the country for so many people and the whole culture? It's because Paul McCartney was doing what he was supposed to do.
Right.
For that ruling class at the top. What the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away.
What about Elvis Presley?
Well,
what did he do?
Well, he brought in the male sex thing, which was almost the pre-male stripper, all fully clothed.
Okay.
Up until that time, the man had to be the man, John Wayne type. And but now they brought in the young guy and said, hey, it's okay to...
Swivel your hips and...
Yeah, do all that stuff.
Do all that stuff.
You know, and it's also, again, hidden meanings as well. L is the God, do you see? And
L-E-L?
Yeah.
L, Elvis, uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the sixth coming race, they call it, the next upgrade of mankind is to come, according to High Masonry and Theosophy. And so you have L, and then you have VI, which is six, and then S is to shape, Elvis, you see. So this is all coded language, which the Masons use all the time, and we use these words all the time too, because no one's explained to the people what it really means.
And besides,
the whole English language was created.
Yeah, I was, you know, this is fascinating, and I don't think you've talked about this because you did it so long ago.
Yeah.
And maybe next time you come on, you could spend more time explaining this.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the control of the media, and I want to remind our listeners that Steve Jacobson will be on with us Wednesday, folks, and his website is now open to you, and it's mindcontrolinamerica.com. If you want to go there and check it out, do so. And, everything that Alan has talked about this evening will be confirmed by what you hear from Stephen on Wednesday. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. Alan, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye, folks. Good night, I should say.
Good night.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Hear that? That's the